Welcome back to The Mountain Life. I'm Mary Beth Maziarz, and I'm here in the studio with Jake Dreyfuss. If you've been listening to the news for the last couple decades, but especially the last few years, you know that the declining water level of the Great Salt Lake is beyond critically low. The state of the lake has now been federally declared as an environmental emergency. Continued water loss, toxic dust storms, and ecosystem collapse are just some of the factors contributing to a desperate situation that may forever change Utah's natural environment, identity, weather, and ability to sustain its population. But there are people working hard to save the Great Salt Lake with critical information for wide, immediate action. Grow the Flow is one of Utah's strongest advocacy groups for the Great Salt Lake. And this morning, we're welcoming one of their principals, Jake Dreyfuss, into the studio to discuss the group's ongoing efforts, the two big upcoming events they're holding in June, and suggestions for concrete actions we can each take to help contribute to the recovery of our iconic Great Salt Lake. Jake Dreyfuss, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me today.
You're welcome. We had a little bit of a traffic, construction, adventure this morning, all of us getting here, and I'm so happy that you made it.
I slipped in right in the nick of time.
Yeah, you did. That's all that counts. Well, you grew up 25 minutes from the shores of Salt Lake, hunting its wetlands, fishing its tributaries, skiing the snow it generates. When did the lake shift in your mind from backdrop to something you felt called to fight for?
Yeah, I would say, about 2021 or so, the lake reached what was its record low in 2021. And that was really a wake-up call for me to really recognize, this place that I've inherently loved, through my appreciation for waterways as a fishing guide, as a duck hunter, as a bird watcher, spending time there with my grandmother and my father, since I was big enough to walk, it was always something that was critically important to me, but I never recognized the potential loss we were going to experience, right? And the scale and scope of that loss too. It's really unique in that losing Great Salt Lake is so much more than just losing an ecosystem, right? It is really the foundation of our snowpack, of the greatest skiing in the world, of, the home to 12 million migratory birds, a major economic engine. And so the future of the lake is really the future of our home. And I think that's something that people need to recognize and internalize and say, what can I do to be a part of this effort to save Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, it's something that is just so easily taken for granted for all this time. It's just part of the landscape, and you think, well, it's not that big a deal. Sure, it goes up a little, it goes down a little, but we really reached a critical point. What do you see as the biggest contributors to the state of the lake that we're at right now?
Yeah, so the lake's decline is about 80% driven by human water diversion upstream. Breaking that down a little bit further, about 65% is agricultural, 25% is residential, and that remaining small percentage is direct evaporation from mineral extractors on the lake. And so that's not to say, right, it's all farmers' fault, and agriculture is the only one that needs to play a role here, right? Mm-hmm. This really is a situation where it's all hands on deck. And we need to rally together as a community across industries, across stakeholders, and say, we're going to be the first community around the world to save their saline lake. And around the globe, right, there's over 100 of these lakes that are almost all in a chronic state of decline. And it's all from the same root problem, which is humans using too much water.
Right.
And having a relationship with water that's out of whack,
Yeah.
It's really a mismanagement issue.
And you've said that not one community has been able to save their lake. So what does it feel like to be working on something that historically speaking has been so difficult to do?
It's daunting.
Yeah.
I think the community members or even our elected officials and our leaders have recognized that there's a problem and it needs to be addressed. But I think almost everyone underestimates how hard it's going to be. And that's really scary, to say no one's done this before. We're writing the roadmap,
yeah.
But at the same time, I find a lot of hope in the people that are doing this work, from some of our leaders, elected officials, to just everyday Utahns who care, who are dedicating their time, resources, energy, and love and channeling that towards the lake. Is certainly what gives me hope in this work.
Hmm. this is a little bit of a big picture question, but also a little bit of a micro question. In a perfect world, what couple of things would happen to most dramatically and most quickly start to replenish the Great Salt Lake?
Yeah, on the agricultural side, you know, it's investing into more efficient irrigation, with the caveat that then we're capturing that saved water and dedicating it to the lake, right? So we're not just expanding acreage or, you know, having another farmer downstream use that water. Mm-hmm. That's really the strongest tool we have right now, as well as in the long term, right? Switching crops, right? Really thinking deeply about what and how we're growing in mm-hmm. Utah as a state and focusing on, right, local food production. On the municipal side, we have to get rid of our grass landscapes. You know, we cannot keep building wall-to-wall Kentucky bluegrass lawns and all these new developments, you know, and in one of the fastest growing states in the country, the most cost-efficient and water-efficient way to save water is on the outset, right? As we're building, it's prioritizing, you know, drought-tolerant landscapes, native plants, xeriscapes, xeriscaping. That's where the savings can come, and continuing to invest in, you know, incentives and subsidies for existing residents to be able to retrofit their lawns and play their part there.
Yeah, and so much of that is about creating that cultural shift, that mindset shift, that it to be luxurious, to be a wonderful neighborhood to live in doesn't have to be blanketed in thick grass. It can look a lot of different ways, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I would say, like, you know, this dynamic and diverse front lawn is a lot more visually appealing to the eye than just kind of a, you know, homogenous monoculture of grass, you know, and there's so many benefits of doing it. It saves you money, it saves you water, creates pollinator habitat. You know, there's lots of little ways that it just brings joy and difference to the landscape.
And when you do, we have, my husband and my son kept bees for a few years, and it is a fascinating thing. Once you do garden yourself, once you do keep bees, once you do have a more engaged relationship with your immediate environment, you have more skin in the game. It kind of affects you a lot more than just your water bill going up, right? So what are some of the steps that people individually, if we're not ranchers, if we're not running a data center, you know, we're not the big water users, but we do want to make a difference. What are some of the steps you encourage people to do?
I mean, if you have the means, you know, consider tearing out your front lawn, right, and retrofitting it with this water-efficient landscaping. There's really awesome subsidies and cost-covering programs available through Utah Waterways that can, you know, cover a third or even up to a half of your project costs.
Really?
Where they'll pay you per square foot of grass that you rip out. So that's a really exciting program to lean into. And then at Grow the Flow, right, a lot of our work is innately civic. You know, I think there really is a critical role for the everyday Utahn to play in being civically engaged in this problem, you know, and in the solution, right? It's like, yes, we can play defense, but we also need to play offense here, you know, and that looks like constructive and consistent communication with our elected officials to say, this is my priority number one, and this is the difference between me staying in Utah long-term and leaving, and what are you going to do about it as my elected leader, right? Yeah. Like, that's really important here.
Well, let's talk about our elected leaders and their response to some of this stuff. The Grow the Flow just helped mobilize nearly 4,000 formal protests against the hyperscale data center that was kind of coming together up in Box Elder County. And the application was withdrawn 2 days ago and greatly edited. Could you talk a little bit about the current state of what's going on with that?
Yeah. So for those of you who aren't aware, right, there's a proposed 40,000 acre data center development just a few miles from the lake, you know, on the northern extent of the lake in northwest Box Elder County. For scale, that's 2.5 times the footprint of Manhattan.
Wow.
And it's at build out expected to use 9 gigawatts of power, which is more than twice the entire state's current energy demand. But it's just like hard to wrap your head around, like, how big of a project this is, right? Increasing state emissions by over 50% if they pursue this, you know, steam-powered natural gas plant as the project proponents have described. And people are activated, people are engaged, and this is the opportunity for me, right? And as an organizer, as someone doing this work, amidst this crisis, I'm always looking for opportunity, right? And for the first time in my years of working on Great Salt Lake, we have united bipartisan support, or in this case, opposition, to a project. And it's really inspiring to see the organic community-led efforts, you know, these filing of water rights protests. Like 4,000 protests is insane.
It is.
You know, a typical change application will get 5 and it'll, you know, the state engineer's eyes will light up. It's like, oh, maybe we need to slow down. And and so this is a situation where we've really almost broken the system, you know, changed the narrative. And the consistent and just unilateral opposition to this project, I think, has woken our policymakers up too, right? I mean, we've seen shifts in tone from the governor, from, you know, the Speaker of the House, and most recently, you know, Senate President Stuart Adams, who was actually right on the MIDA board, which was the government, quasi-government agency that, you know, was essentially made the project possible. And so that pressure is working, right? And our policymakers are being forced to listen, right? Yeah. Which is really important here.
And if the project were to go forward, or had been going forward as it was set, I'd heard a lot about how it would affect the temperatures, mm-hmm. even up here, and snowpack and various things like that. Is that even in its current iteration, is that still something we need to be aware of and concerned about?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, you know, you'll hear project proponents and data center proponents more broadly saying, right, we have closed loop systems now. These don't use water. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's pretty true, mm-hmm. right? The technology has advanced immensely, where 20 years ago, right, they were using evaporative cooling, and this process itself was immensely water consumptive. But what they aren't talking about is the power generation, right? And this is the piece that is the huge water demand in the situation of the Stratos data center project, right? We're talking about, like I mentioned before, 9 gigawatts of power being from fossil fuel, you know, steam powered natural gas generation. And this can use tens and tens of thousands of acre feet of water once it's at capacity. And so that's the biggest risk here, right? It's not the cooling system. It's how are we powering this major facility? And that stands to impact our statewide emissions by over 50% if it's at scale there. And so that's where we're going to see the impacts to the lake, the impacts to the regional groundwater and aquifer. And then that extends up here to Park City, right, in the form of as the lake continues to shrink, that means less lake effect snow. That means less, you know, consistent snowpack and precipitation up here for, you know, this just remarkable skiing that we have and are so privileged to be able to do just right here in our backyards. And mm-hmm. and that's where those impacts, you know, are tied to communities around the state.
Wow. Well, I am glad to hear that some of the closed loop systems are moving in the right direction. That's a sign of impact, that people have been asking for more and getting more. So that's great. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your upcoming events. You've got Lake Fest coming up. Is that June 13th? Is
June
that
13th,
right?
June 13th,
yep. Tell the folks about Lake Fest.
Yeah, so this is our biggest event of the year. It's a day-long, free, family-friendly community festival on the shores of Great Salt Lake. And the purpose of it is really to bring community back to the lake. You know, in my whole lifetime, right, it's been seen as this stinky, buggy place that you shouldn't even think about going, right? But I grew up on stories of my grandmother going to the Saltaire, right, which at one point was the largest dance hall west of the Mississippi,
yes.
swimming in the lake, wading out to Black Rock. And there was so much community and culture around the lake. And we've lost that, right? And this is the purpose of Lake Fest, right? And it's fun, too. We'll have, you know, over a dozen nonprofit partners there to share their mission, live music all day, food trucks, free kayaking and canoeing, art workshops, naturalist walks, SIAD activities. And so there's really something for everyone at Lake Fest. And the kind of downside of it is it's probably going to be the last time we see sailboats on Great Salt Lake until we get the water levels up.
Wow.
You know, just last Saturday, they pulled the big boats out of the marina where they have to get these cranes, and it's just really dramatic, you know, dragging these boats out of the water. And they're expecting to have to pull all the boats out of the marina just shortly after the event. And so, you know, I would encourage everyone, you know, from all walks of life to come to Lake Fest. It's Saturday, June 13th at the Great Salt Lake State Park, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it's a lot of fun. And we've got some awesome opportunity drawing opportunities as well from Patagonia, Gregory,
nice.
The Curador, Ski Utah,
ooh.
All sorts of fun stuff. Deer Valley summer lift tickets. So
nice.
You got a good chance to take home a fun prize too.
Well, my family is already signed up and I was so happy to hear about it because sometimes we do get in our little bubble up here and we don't venture out to the adventurous, you know, states 30 miles away to do things in Salt Lake. But if listeners want to register, just so you guys can have an idea of numbers, I think, right?
Yeah.
Where did they go? What do they do?
Yeah, you can just go to growtheflowutah.org/lakefest or growtheflowutah.org/events. And there's a simple, website there with more information about the event. You can register if you can. Yeah, it's great for us to know how many people we should expect, but come either way. We want everyone and anyone to come and enjoy Great Salt Lake with us next Saturday.
And thank you for having a positive event because there's so many things that are depressing about the state of various environmental elements that when you can get together with a positive vibe, it makes the energy around something so much more possible. It just really lights people up in a way that they're excited to act and to help support the programs.
Yeah, I mean, money and policy reform are going to fill the lake up quickly. You know, love and community commitment are going to keep it full, right? And that's really what we need to build in the long term.
I love that. You also have an event coming up at the Eccles in Salt Lake City. Is a film showing of the lake, is that right?
Yeah, actually up here in Park City.
Oh, it's in Park City.
Yeah, at the Eccles Theater. This is a really exciting one. So as most Park City residents know, right, last year was our last Sundance Film Festival. And one of the featured documentary films was The Lake. And this is just an incredible documentary made by Abby Ellis, a local filmmaker. And we'll be showing this film, which follows Ben Abbott, our executive director, Brian Steed, the Great Salt Lake Commissioner, and Bonnie Baxter, a wonderful scientist and microbiologist who's been working on the lake for about 30 years, as they're fighting to save it. And it's really just this beautifully made film that kind of watches more like a political drama than an environmental film. But June 22nd at 7 p.m., doors at 6 p.m. at the Eccles Theater. And you can just go to growtheflowutah.org/events to claim a ticket for that. They're running out. We're expecting a packed house, 1,200 seats, and we've already accounted for, I think, about 1,100. So you've only probably got a few more days to get your tickets, ladies and gentlemen.
And what's the date of that again?
That is June 22nd.
Yep. June 22nd. All right. So jump on growtheflowutah.org/events to find out about those things. Well, there's an art installation coming to Memory Grove, Olafur Eliasson's A Symphony of Disappearing Sounds for the Great Salt Lake, a light and sound work that activates every night for 10 days. The piece uses a musical composition and colorful light projection on a large elevated sphere. What made Grow the Flow want to bring art into the conversation?
Yeah, so I think this installation already happened.
Oh, it did. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, well, no worries, but... Yeah. And Grow the Flow wasn't directly involved with this project, but it was a product of Wake the Great Salt Lake, which was the Bloomberg Philanthropies gave $1 million to Salt Lake City to create art for Salt Lake. And largely speaking, I mean, I think this is a critical part of this long-term work to save the lake, right? Creative expression is what can bring people in and allow them to feel agency and responsibility over this issue. You know, there's nothing I can do to break down a piece of policy being pursued by the legislature that's going to get someone feeling amped about saving the lake, you know, but when you have, you know, artists and creatives and poets and writers and filmmakers turning their attention towards the lake and leveraging the power of storytelling, I mean, that's where we can really shift the narrative and cultural perception on this issue.
Yeah. Grow the Flow installed the live water tracker on Salt Lake County traffic billboards, basically a public health monitor for the lake. Tell us a little bit about this process of making something as abstract as lake elevation visible to somebody sitting at a stoplight. What's that like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about the lake, we're always talking about an elevation, right? It's 4190 something, you know, and that doesn't really mean anything to most people, nor should it, right? It's this very sort of esoteric way to talk about things. And so we said, how can we simplify that? And so what we came to was percent full, right?
Yeah.
There's a simple metric of volume. And right now the lake is sitting at about 34% full, meaning that it's lost nearly 2/3 of its water volume of where it should be at a healthy level. And I think that's a lot more of a wake-up call than just saying, right, we're at 4191.4 feet above sea level, right? That doesn't mean anything to
anyone. It doesn't. And I remember years ago, we'd go down to Lake Powell, and you could see the high water marks just from, you know, the minerals in the water. And that's a very visual thing when you see it's 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet down. What, comparatively, when was the last time that the Salt Lake, Great Salt Lake, was relatively healthy?
Yeah, the last time Great Salt Lake was at a healthy level of 4,200 feet was 2002.
Wow.
And I think this is an important date in particular because our governor has recently made a commitment to restore the lake in 2034. And the one thing that those 2 years have in common are the Winter Olympics.
Right.
And so we had this moment in 2002, the last time the lake was full. Now we have to ask the question, can we rally as a community and can we, you know, encourage and pressure our decision makers to really take this monumental and difficult goal seriously and see the lake healthy again by 2034, the next time we welcome the Winter Games.
Well, I certainly love having a hard deadline because I think that that lights a fire under some people. And I know that our president was recently tweeting about the importance of the Great Salt Lake. How much federal support or federal interest are you seeing right now?
More and more. I mean, it's really exciting. You know, I think there's kind of political and ethical questions, right, around where are we getting this money from? What are the trade-offs and all these kind of nuanced discussions. But at the end of the day, right, we need the dollars and we need them today. You know, the lake is on a timeline to collapse within the coming years. And so we need to really accelerate existing programs like water leasing, like turf removal, like invasive species removal, if we stand a chance of seeing the lake restored by 2034. And so President Trump tweeted about the lake in February. In late March, a $1 billion was added into the White House's budget for the fiscal year 2027. And more recently, we've seen some appropriation requests from Congress, you know, not in the range of $1 billion, several tens of millions of dollars. And, you know, there's active conversations right now about how do we, you know, leverage existing pools of money from the Bureau of Reclamation or Department of Interior or, you know, other kind of environmental entities at the federal level and rechannel that money towards the lake. And so it's hard. It's immensely political and fraught with, you know, tension, but it's something we need. You know, $1 billion for Great Salt Lake could be really game changing, you know, to supercharge some of these effective programs.
And is the use for the money is towards the things you mentioned, like the turf and the invasive species. Are those the type of things where the money goes?
Yeah. So there was a high level framework announced about a week and a half ago, and the largest pool of money would be going towards agricultural water leasing, the next municipal water conservation, and then a few other buckets of money. And there's one that I think definitely raises some red flags for us, which is $190 million for what the framework describes as high impact engineering solutions, right? And this is a narrative that we've seen a lot from our legislature, and which is, you know, we're one innovation away from saving the lake, right? All we need to do is build a pipeline from the Snake River or the Columbia River, and then all of our water problems will be solved. Or the other thing that's gaining a lot of traction is, can we, you know, pay for California to desalinate their water and then get their Colorado River water rights and use that to save the lake? And I think this is a dangerous mentality because it's investing huge sums of money into solutions that won't be implementable for decades, right? And we don't have decades, right? We need to be investing in things that can return on this investment in a year, in 2 years, right now, when the lake needs it so desperately. And the other problem with this kind of mentality is, right, it's focusing on increasing supply when what we need to do is decrease demand, right? We're not like, you know, the Middle East where we are incredibly arid, right? We have 100 miles of mountains coated with snow every single year that are a massive reservoir for us. So it's really a mismanagement problem. And if we can double down and really thoughtfully commit to conservation, that alone gets us across the finish line to save Great Salt Lake, continue to grow, and to continue to farm as a state.
Wow. Well, we've been speaking with Jake Dreyfuss of Grow the Flow, and their two big events are coming up at the Eccles here in Park City. They're going to show the lake on June 22nd. Sorry, I'm having trouble with that one. And also Lakefest coming up on June 13th. We are so excited about both those events and really thankful for the work that Grow the Flow is doing. Jake, thank you so much for being on The Mountain Life this week.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity and for telling the lake story.
Okay, well, we'll see you at those upcoming events. Thanks so much.